inviting me to speak in this workshop. I've really enjoyed it so far. I'll try not to spoil the rest with my talk. You have here a list of some collaborators and students that have worked on this project. So first, some motivation. Why do we want to do fast tomographic reconstruction? It might be obvious, but the main reason this is such an acute problem today is because of new capabilities on the one hand and rising needs on the other hand from the medical imaging community for the most part. Oops. So what are some developments? If we compare images about 12 years ago or 13 years ago to images taken just 2 years ago, one thing we notice is tremendous increase in resolution and image quality in general. So that's one development we've seen. Another is, whereas maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we were in the realm of two-dimensional slice imaging. So the patient is translated throughout the gantry as the image is acquired. Another development concomitant with that is the increase of number of rows of detectors. So previously we had one row of detectors acquiring a single slice in one revolution, either as an axial slice or on a helix. And then companies started to add additional rows. Now we're at 16 rows, which allows you to acquire a wide swath of the body in one rotation, and you can cover the entire body much faster with a higher pitch of the helix. As this has happened, the data format has changed, and whereas previously we could use a transaxon approximation without much error, the wider array of detectors now gives us a conbeam acquisition, so the rays cannot be assumed parallel without penalty. There are some errors associated with that approximation. So really what you want to do is to think about the conbeam geometry, of which we all know about, and this adds some complexity to the problem. Another aspect are some applications. You probably recognize what these are. Those are your security scanners in airports, and those need essentially real-time acquisition. It's not a good thing if you have to recall a suitcase after it has gone through, because half an hour later you've got a reconstruction. The reconstruction has to happen at the rate the suitcases are running through this. Right now it's limited to 500 bags an hour. The goal is to reach 1,000 bags per hour. That was, the Congress mandate of 1,000 bags per hour. They're not there yet. Another real-time application is cardiac imaging. One method to achieve that is with electronic beam tomography, where instead of rotating a mechanical gantry, you rotate a beam electronically, scan a circular anode, and you can acquire images within 33 milliseconds. You can get two slices. So to summarize these points, we have increasing resolution. In medical, now the standard is 512 by 512 in a cross-section. This is probably will increase in 2 years or so to 1024 squared. But already in micro-CT and industrial scanners, you can get resolutions of 8K cubed. And if you think about the rate the computation increases, this will be a tremendous load. There is volumetric acquisition. There is an increase in acquisition speed. And there are real-time applications, such as cardiac imaging, interventional imaging, where a surgeon is working with instruments guided by an imaging modality such as a CT, and there is security imaging. All these require essentially real-time imaging. In addition, there is conbeam reconstruction, which is now desirable, and it's much more complex. So all these require fast reconstruction. So the bad news is that the scaling laws are fairly unfavorable. Computation scales as order n cubed for an n by n image in two dimensions, or n to the fourth for an n cube image. Just some numbers. These will become obsolete as computers become faster, but for only 1 gigahertz Pentium, a volume reconstruction with 200 slices takes about 1 hour. If you want to do a quasi-exact reconstruction, the number quoted by Willy Callender is 10 hours for his implementation, and Alexander Katsevich is not here, but he told me his algorithms run very slowly, but he blamed that on his implementation. But anyway, I think even with a good implementation, these algorithms are very demanding. So if you calculate that you want about a refresh rate of about 3 or 6 frames a second for cardiac imaging to be useful at all, and you may want to reconstruct a volume like that 6 times per second compared to the times we have, you need about 10,000 speed up compared to what we currently have. So tremendous speed up is really required. By the way, I should attribute those previous images which I've shown of the resolution and so on to IMP, Institute of Medical Physics, in Erlangen, Germany. They were picked off their website, so that's the source for those. Okay, the good news is that actually you can do things faster. So there are order n squared log n algorithms for 2D or n cubed log n algorithms for 3D. And those are coming in various flavors. One of them is well known, is the Fourier method. It uses the slice projection theorem to map your data to a polar grid in the two-dimensional case in the Fourier domain. Then a trivial problem, interpolate from a polar grid to a rectangular and use an FFT, an inverse FFT. So, simple algorithm, but actually doesn't work that well because of the interpolation errors. So you have to have very accurate interpolation to meet medical accuracy requirements. Some improvements to this, gridding, non-uniform FFTs, all these have partial success, but still there's a question of trade-off between computation and accuracy. There's a method by Brady in 92, rediscovered by Nielsen in 96, which I would call a Lynx method. That's a fast algorithm, uses a divide and conquer idea similar to ours, but it's limited in accuracy. And then there is a multi-level method by Brandt. Again, a divide and conquer approach, essentially equivalent to that of Nielsen. And in fact, Frank Natterer, when he reviews Nielsen, explains in the term that Brandt uses to explain his own algorithm. So you can see the equivalence there very clearly. The limitations of these methods. One, there is accuracy versus speed-up trade-off, and that's not that favorable. So for example, for 512 cube images, they get a speed of about 7 or so. So not that dramatic. So really the devil is in the constants. So yes, you can have methods which work, give you a speed up of n over log n, but do you get a good constant? If the constant is not good, it's not going to be very practical. And then the other limitation is all these methods rely on a parallel beam structure and they require rebinning from parallel beam to, from whatever divergent beam geometry you have to parallel beam, and that is by itself demanding and also introduce additional errors. Okay, so the method I'd like to describe to you, we've termed FHBP, fast hierarchical back projection. So it focuses on the bottleneck, on the back projection step, and tries to speed it up. So in practice, for 512 squared images, we get better than 50-fold speed up, which is a fairly nice speed up. Similar things for 3D conbeam. Works for essentially all geometries or most practical geometries. And of course, you get bigger speed ups for bigger images, because the scaling is n squared log n instead of n cubed, and similarly for 3D. And if you implement this in software, it'll write more slow in terms of computers getting faster, so you get this automatic speed up by itself. Or if you implement it in hardware, you can get extra speed up, with the limitation that hardware becomes obsolete. So that's a path which actually manufacturers are trying to stay away from. They're trying to move to pure software implementations. Okay, so how does this work? Let's see. So instead of talking about back projection, I'll talk first about reprojection, or projection computation of the discrete Redon transform, and we'll get the back projection via the adjoint relationship between the two. And I'll talk a bit about some results from error analysis. Okay, so why reprojection? It's easier to explain. The adjoint relationship gives you the back projection, and reprojection by itself is useful. For example, if you want to do an iterative algorithm, you need both reprojection and back projection. Okay, so we have this 2D domain, we're computing line integrals, but in a discrete setting we have this grid, and what we need to compute is ray sums along these lines. For any one direction, one view, we have on the order of n squared pixels, which we need to visit, and then we have to do this from roughly n directions, so that gives you the n cube or n cube cost. I denote here a discrete angle transform, R of p, where p is the number of directions, and a complete discrete transform where the rays also are sampled as RNP. Okay, so the idea is divide and conquer. Somewhat similar to the FFT idea, except there are no FFTs here. So the A is to reconstruct instead of, or to project instead of the entire image at once, break into quadrants and project each quarter separately. So almost the first thing you'd think about if you've taken CS 101. Oops. Okay, and what makes this work is the linearity and the translation property of the Redon transform. So let's look at the 2D shifter. So Z delta of F is a translation operator on the image, which translates it by vector delta. And let's define a fractional radial shifter, which operates on projections and shifts them in the radial direction by an amount delta. Not by an amount delta, by an amount delta dot theta vector. So this is the corresponding shift of the projection. You shift an image, there is a simple relationship, the projection gets shifted, and that depends on the angle. Okay, so we have this relationship that the Redon transform of a shifted image is just a shifted projection by the corresponding amount. Shifts can be implemented by a convolution with an appropriate kernel, or you can approximate this kernel. But in the case of an exact shift, you get the exact relationship denoted at the bottom here, that the discrete Redon transform of a shifted image is a shifted Redon transform. And the shift can be fractional, so it can involve fractions of pixels. So this leads us to the first kind of decomposition I'll speak about. First line, we have the image written as a sum of four sub-images. The operator K, n over 2, is a truncation operator, which truncates the image to n over 2 by n over 2. So we shift the image, truncate to halves, and then shift back, so we can recompose the image from the four quadrants. Taking the Radon transform of both sides, using linearity, we get this. And then we can commute the Radon transform with a shift by shifting instead the projections. So we get this equation. And when we have to do a Radon transform of an image of half size, really we need just to worry about the half size Radon transform, and this is our final decomposition. So what does this mean? It means that we've decomposed the projection of an n by n image into four projections of n over 2 by n over 2 images. So graphically it's displayed like this. These boxes denote these operations. There are shifts here, truncation, half size projections, and then radial shifts with fractions. The problem is that this doesn't buy us anything. Okay, so we did this, but no speed up, no cost saving, because we have to do four such, and you have to multiply numbers, there is no saving. So where does the saving come from? So it comes from looking at the harmonic decomposition of the 2D Redon transform. So here's the theorem. So first, let me tell you what we're looking at. These are the projections, angular variable, radial variable, and we take a one-dimensional Redon transform along the radial variable, and then we compute the Fourier coefficients with respect to the other periodic variable here. So we get this function denoted by g hat. So here's the theorem. This formulation is due to Palamudov, but previous versions were by Lindgren and Ratti, and by Natori in 1986. There was a rigorous version. So what it says is that if we have a function bounded in support to a disk of radius w, then these coefficients can be bounded by this expression. And it's easiest to look at the case epsilon really small, in which case it says that the support of this function is determined by this exponential. Okay, what does it say? It's easiest to look at this graphically. This is the famous bowtie result. So the spectrum of the projections is supported on a shape like this, a bowtie. This is a slope 1 over w, where w is the disk containing the image. Okay, and if you think about an image which is essentially band limited, all practical images may be assumed such, or after back projection, you apply a filter which anyway limits your bandwidth, so it's good enough to think about such essentially band-limited images. We have a band limit on this side, and that gives you this bow tie. Okay, let's look at the product BW. So let B, this bandwidth here, the radial bandwidth, W is the radius of the disk bounding the object. This product, BW, for n by n image, which is simply Nyquist rate, turns out to be this size. So is determined by the size of the image. So these results have been used a lot by in the past to derive sampling theorems. So such sampling theorems were derived probably the first time by Rat and Lindgren in this formulation, but then more rigorously by Frank Natterer and Adel Faridani and Desba and others have studied sampling the radon transform based on its harmonic decomposition. For us, all we care about is this result, which says that essentially the projections are a trigonometric polynomial of order 2WB. Okay, because of this expression, we see here that there is a finite number of Fourier coefficients which appear in the expression for this, for the Fourier transform of this function. So it's a trigonometric polynomial, and because it's a trigonometric polynomial, it can be interpolated from an appropriate number of samples. So we use also the symmetry, and we get that essentially this number of projections suffices for perfect angular interpolation. So it's enough to take a certain number of angles, and the rest can be obtained by interpolation. Okay, so that's observation number one. Observation number two is that a smaller image has a smaller angular bandwidth. So image of half the size has half the angular bandwidth, because this slope, remember, is 1 over W, W being the disk bounding the image. Okay, so the moral of this is that we can actually project at half number of angles for an image which is half the size, and then get the remaining projections just by interpolation, okay, which is a cheap operation. So let's introduce a factor 2 angular interpolation operator U, which engineers would denote in this form: upsampling, which is insertion of zero every other sample, and then perfect low-pass filtering. And then the result we have, based on the bowtie support of the spectrum of the projections, is that a half-size radon transform of a half-size image can be obtained by taking a half-size radon transform with half the number of projections and then interpolating by a factor 2 angularly. Okay, another observation is that interpolation actually can be done very accurately. So if we have a band-limited signal, we can interpolate with an error which falls off exponentially with the length of the filter, if provided we have some oversampling. So mu is an oversampling factor, tells you how far beyond the Nyquist rate you're sampling, and if you have such oversampling, the error can be made to converge very quickly. So you can use, in fact, short interpolators to get good accuracy. Okay, so here's the second kind of decomposition we use, which will provide a speed up. And the idea is we take, again, the four quadrants, but each quadrant now is projected at P over 2 views, and then we use interpolation to double the number of projections. Okay, so we had do essentially only half the work. So this is the graphical representation of this. Again, we divide into quadrants, shift them to the origin, reproject the quadrants at half number of angles, angularly interpolate each of the sets of projections, and then shift radially to move the projections back to where they belong for the quadrants in the correct place. So that's the entire decomposition. In terms of cost, you can see we get a factor of 2 speed up because we do P over 2 projections, same cost as before. So in total, we get a factor of 2 saving. Of course, you can do this recursively, so you can keep repeating this and dividing the image into smaller and smaller quadrants and shifting and so on. So you get a structure like this, and if you do this log base 2 n times, the cost will be on the order of n squared log n. And ultimately, in the last stage, you'll be computing projections of a single pixel at a small number of views, which is a trivial operation. Okay, so really all the computation now is in these decomposition aggregation steps. There is the back projection. The projection itself for the final step is a trivial operation. Okay, so some small refinements here. Remember the first decomposition, which was didn't give us a speed up, but did decompose the problem into four, was approximate because we had to do fractional shifts. Whenever you do fractional shifts and you don't have an infinite interpolator, that'll be approximate. But we can make it into an accurate, an exact decomposition if we factor the fractional shift into a fractional delay, which is just up to half a pixel, plus minus, and an integer shift. We can absorb the fractional delay into the reprojection. So when you project, anyway, you have to decide at which point you project. So we can absorb that fractional shift into that decision, that calculation, and then do only integer shifts in that first decomposition. And that'll result in the first decomposition being exact always without any assumption of band limiting or bow tie or any such. So this can be written like this, that we get this commutation, almost commutation, that radon transform of a shifted projection can be expressed as a slightly modified projection of an integer shifted projection. So that makes the first decomposition exact. And this is important because we want to be able to apply it without penalty. And we'll see why in a moment. So we want to actually use both decompositions, both the slow one and the fast one. Okay, so why do you want to use the slow decomposition? Okay, it doesn't buy you computation, but it buys you oversampling. So suppose we start with PNN, which do not give us oversampling. So an image is, in medical applications typically is not oversampled. So you don't have band gaps, which will allow you to design short filters. So you won't get good accuracy. But after we apply that decomposition one, we get half-size images still with a full number of projections. That means now we're in an oversampled situation, and we can proceed with decomposition two. So we apply decomposition one as many times as necessary to get into an oversample situation, and then we can apply decomposition two with appropriate savings. What does it cost you? Here, you do work without speed up, so you lose some of your speed up because you, instead of decomposing log base 2 of n times, you decompose somewhat less, so the speed up somewhat reduced, but your accuracy is increased. So that gives you a knob to trade off between accuracy and speed. Okay, how do we get to back projection? Well, you use edge joints, and engineers sometimes like to conclude some graphical relationship between boxes using the edge joint. So first, the back projection is the edge joint of the projection. True also for the discrete versions of the projection and back projection. Upsampling, which is introduction of zeros, has its edge joint as downsampling by a factor of two. Filters are laid like this. These we've seen already. And then fractional shifts remain fractional shifts. And then interpolation by factor two becomes decimation by factor two. So what is decimation by factor two? You filter with a low-pass filter of cutoff pi over 2, and then you throw out every other sample using this box. Okay, so using these relationships and a couple other things, we can get the back projection. So the first observation is that back projection is really local. Okay, so the only reason the 2D Radon transform is non-local is the filtering step. We assume here the filtering step has been applied in the beginning. So we are working with filtered projections. So we have only local operations in the back projection. So if we want to back project onto a smaller image, sub-image, we can truncate the image before. So this, so we define a truncation operator which truncates the image to half the size. And then we have this relationship that truncating the back projected image is the same as truncating the projections to the appropriate size and then back projecting. So these two commute. Okay, so in back projection, decomposition one, you can obtain it essentially by graph manipulation. The previous one, what is involved, you take the projections, radially shift them, truncate the sinograms, you back project onto the quadrants using half the size back projection, shift the sub-images and add, and you get your final image. Actually, this by itself is also useful if you just want to decompose a back projection onto multiple processors in exact way. That'll give you a decomposition. But the more interesting one is the fast decomposition, where here you have a decimation step. So you reduce the number of views by a factor of 2 here, and you do the rest. Now, this should be P over 2. So that's not P, that's P over 2. There should be back projections of half the size and using half number of U's. And then you recompose. Okay, so you can do this, of course, hierarchically again, recursively, and you get again the n log n type speed up. How does it work? So you can get very nice accuracy. This is a comparison of point spread functions for the conventional FBP and the hierarchical version. They're quite similar. And you can test in various reconstructions. This is a reconstruction of a slice from the visual human data set, so not a concocted phantom. And these are the two results compared with the blow up here, again quite similar. For these results, we get a speed up of about 50 for a 512 squared image. Okay, so the algorithm works. How well does it work? We can analyze it theoretically, so we've done such analysis. That's useful to choose various parameters in the algorithm, and we actually get closed form expressions for the errors, bounds for the errors. I won't run through that in detail. Just want to show you some kind of some results. For example, we can compute, predict such curves. So this is speed up here, and this is effective SNR. What is this? Whenever you do an approximation, there will be some error. That error can be translated to an equivalent noise in the input projections. So if you ask yourself, what operating point should you choose? Well, if your input projections have an SNR of 40, you can tolerate probably an error, similar error in your reconstruction itself. So that will give you a speed up of about 50. And these are various parameters which you can choose to trade off speed up versus accuracy. So we can pick our operating point anywhere on these curves to get the desired trade-off between speed and accuracy. And we have various bounds which correspond very nicely with actual simulations with that visual data set. So this is a predicted, that's a bound, that these are actually actual errors observed as a function of various parameters. So we have fairly complete understanding of these effects. Okay, so I'll skip here. And now comes the question, what about other geometries? Okay, so we have 2D parallel beam. What can you do with other geometries? Okay, so we have 2D parallel beam reprojection, 2D parallel beam back projection. We have a 3D Radon back projection and reprojection, in fact. And the same idea is generalized easily to all the parallel beam scenarios. Okay, or parallel plane. The more difficult is the divergent beam geometry. Okay, things become a little bit different there. Oops, we'll have to click fast through this. Okay, so what happens in fan beam? So the next easiest case, fan beam in 2D, but divergent beam. Well, the problem is the shift property doesn't hold. So the projections of a shifted object are not shifted projections, because you also have magnification as you move away from the source. So the previous trick where we could compute projections of centered sub-images and then move the projections to correspond to the sub-images in the right place doesn't work. That's one problem. Another is that you have weighted back projections, so you have to put weights, and those weights depend on global position in the image. Okay, so those shift ideas of shifting sub-images doesn't quite work. Well, we still want to do divide and conquer, but the idea is to keep the sub-images in the global coordinate system. So don't move sub-images, don't shift them. What we will shift is actually the projections themselves. So let's look here at the projection of the sub-image. And what we want to do is to find a way to reconstruct directly the projection of this sub-image using a smaller number of views. Okay, first we have the exact decomposition without reduction of number of views, very similar to what we had before. Truncate the projections to correspond to that sub-image, and then back-project, still using the full number of projections, directly in the position in the global coordinates. So there's no shifting of sub-images. You back-project directly onto the appropriate quadrant, and you can apply the appropriate weighting. So this exact decomposition works really in an easy way. gain computational cost, no saving. And now we want to do the approximate decomposition. So again, the idea is that the half-size image is determined by half the number of projections, and we'll get a speed up by factor 2. And this follows from a similar harmonic decomposition for the fan beam projections. So this is a picture of the support, how it looks. This time we're taking computing Fourier coefficients of the projections with respect to the two variables, the source position and the fan angle within the fan. You get similar support, and using that again, we get that conclusion that smaller images require fewer projections. But we don't want to shift sub-images, so what we shift is actually projections. So the procedure is the following. We shift projections to correspond to a centered image instead of shifting the sub-image. So the procedure is we truncate projection to correspond to an n over 2 sub-image, shift the projections, then we filter them angularly, subsampled by factor of 2, so that's your factor 2 decimation, and then shift them back to the right position. So things are aligned correctly in the global coordinate system. Okay, to show you that this actually works, here's an object reconstructed from a full set of projections. That's a 256 by 256 object from a full set of projections. Instead now, we look at a sub-image around this object and decimate the projections by a factor 8, I think, and this is the corresponding reconstruction. You'll notice that there are artifacts around, but within the region of interest, within the sub-image, there are no artifacts. So the object is correctly reconstructed, and that's a slice through it. These are artifacts outside the sub-image. Within the sub-image, you get good accuracy. So this shows you graphically that this idea actually works, that you can reconstruct sub-images from a reduced number of projections. So once you have that, again, you get the same kind of proximate decomposition, except this one now involves shifting projections back and forth instead of shifting sub-images. And you can apply the decomposition recursively. Again, without shifting sub-images, you keep them in the global coordinate system. And you get multi-level decompositions and so on. Okay, how does it work? Okay, so I have a real-time demo here, so the algorithm is running on this laptop. It won't be the fastest, but I'll show you a comparison between the slow algorithm, the conventional algorithm, and the fastback projection. So let me hit this so this starts running. It'll take about 35 seconds. And let me point out some parameters here which can be selected. There is 1536 projections. The image is 512 by 512, Shep-Logan phantom. For shifting, all those shifts are used. We use linear interpolation, just two-point interpolator, a trivial one, very cheap. And this parameter, holdoff, that denotes how many exact decompositions we use. So we don't use any exact decompositions in this instance. And here it comes. That's the conventional reconstruction. This is a slice along this line here. And it took 26 seconds. Okay, it felt like a long time, but just 26 seconds. Okay, let's do the fast one. Okay, so the fast appeared faster, in fact. And we see here a speed up of about factor 46 in this instance. And this compares the two slices. Well, visually they appear perhaps similar, but there are small differences here, which you can see. There is an RMS error listed here, fairly small, and there is good agreement. I can blow up this if you're interested in small detail. So we can blow it up and look at small errors and so on. Okay, but we have all those trade-offs. So we can now introduce one level of exact decomposition and rerun the fast algorithm. And now the accuracy is increased. The deviations are even smaller. We can even instead, or in addition, pick a higher interpolator, a three-point interpolator. Still not very complicated. And we get an even greater accuracy. The RMS error has been further reduced. The speedup has suffered. So longer interpolator, more steps of exact decomposition, speed up now is only 18. So we can trade off speed up versus accuracy depending on the desired operating point. Some applications require higher accuracy, medical diagnosis. Other applications like security scanning turns out actually requires fairly low accuracy because they're not looking at the images. All they do automatic detection of presence of explosives, and that doesn't require that high of an accuracy. Okay, so much for the Phantom. Okay, seeing this. Okay, so this is kind of a summary comparison showing that we get very good accuracy. Point spread functions, again, can be made essentially indistinguishable. And now to 3D and Conbeam. How do we do this? Well, the decomposition now is in three dimensions. Again, a recursive decomposition in three dimensions. So we've implemented this for a helical Conbeam scan. And we use a quasi-exact algorithm due to Kudo and DeFries. And these are some recent results. This is the conventional reconstruction, two slices in two perpendicular directions through the reconstruction using conventional algorithm, and this is using the FAST algorithm. This is a cut through these showing that there is very good agreement. Again, similar speedups. So in conclusion, there is, we believe, a rising need for fast reconstruction, and we have an algorithm which is fast and accurate, can be tuned between speed and accuracy, applicable to most practical scanning modalities of interest. We have some ongoing work on theory here. We have algorithms work, but we cannot quite explain why. So that's not a bad situation to be in. Sometimes it's the opposite. The problem here is the following, that, for example, for 3D Conbeam helical, there is no good theory of the harmonic decomposition, at least none that we're aware of. A few days ago, Adel Faradani presented an analysis of sampling for fan beam, but there was a transaxial approximation in the helical case. The assumption was that the fans are parallel. So that's an approximation. Using that same approximation, we can quasi-justify our results. But if we want accurate results, we want accurate error bounds, we have to have a rigorous harmonic decomposition result for helical cone beam, which we don't have yet, and so this is something in the works. If any one of you has such a result, I'll be happy to hear about it, because we'll just go and incorporate it right into our work, and we'll give you credit. Okay, thank you very much.
Questions? Yeah, sure.
Those
very nice.
Thank you.
I guess I'm wondering, when you think of these projections, so when you think of your integrals, do you think of a detector as being a point and the pixels as being little squares, and so the image is constant on pixels and you're doing a single ray through it, or do you think of the detectors as being lines or areas? And
well, that depends whether it's a Monday or a Tuesday. We think of them both ways. So there's a simpler analysis which uses that approximation of point approximation, pixels being points. Or we can use a detailed model for the pixel or any basis function you want. So we have, actually the algorithms are implemented, some versions of them with spline models for basis and so on. So we can carry out the entire analysis using a detector model, which is an integrating detector over an interval, or any other response function you want. We can incorporate focal point size and so on. So all these refinements can be incorporated into the algorithm. But turns out that, at least in our experience, that some very simple models work, that you can ignore much of the complexity and you get sufficient accuracy. Now, this is true for the medical type images we've looked at. For industrial images, where they have very high density inclusions or objects, metal castings, there these approximations can fail. And that's one reason why they go to 8K by 8K cubed type images. They need that extreme resolution, and there you have to do much more accurate modeling. So we have versions of this which do the accurate modeling. In fact, the paper by Samit Basu and myself in 2001 has such models, more accurate models. So all those work.
Yeah. I'll have to look that up. In a lot of our work, we have high-density objects.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They can be dental filling.
Yes, and I expect in those applications that will be important. Yeah. Although we have, well, this will be a problem once you start having nonlinear effects. As long as you have linear, you know, a linear model, things scale in a simple way. So we have examples with a phantom, with a dental phantom, in fact, a cross-section of a jaw with simulated metal fillings, and it works just as well with the same kind of coarse approximations. If you have nonlinear effects, beam hardening and so on, I expect you'd have to do more accurate modeling.
So even in the dental case, the filling cuts through a pixel, doesn't fill a pixel.
Then yeah.
If you look tangentially to the surface of the filling through the pixel, you can get very high transmission through that part where there's no filling.
Right.
Whereas if you look perpendicularly to the same pixel, you get almost no.
Right, but I think the reference reconstructions which we're looking at, we're comparing to the reference reconstruction, not to the phantom, not to the object, not to ground truth, but to the reference reconstruction. And for those, we get good agreement with fairly coarse approximations. So that's extent. But we can model more accurately. Yeah.
You listed applications, but you didn't mention one. I'm not sure where the field is right now, but fully 3D PET imaging is a place where it is.
Yes.
A huge amount of fast-back rejection and the main constraint in it. Logic change to the Fourier rebidding method in 3D, but and that's also perhaps somewhat appealing because in one direction you have fan beam, in the other direction is parabol. So that might be an interesting.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Actually, when I mentioned that we have both reprojection and back projection, this is with a thought toward iterative algorithms, which would be very appealing for applications such as PET, I think. And if you get a speed up of factor 50, that would make such methods attractive.
That would certainly be significant in the PET field.
Yeah.
In your simulation that you showed, the sampling rate struck me just offhand as a little bit high in the angular direction. So you had about 1,500
feet. 1,536, right.
So
yes.
For a clinical CT, it would be typically more like 1,000.
Yes.
Or maybe even fewer, maybe closer to 750.
Yes.
If you're trying to scan very fast. Do your speed ups, are the speed ups as impressive when you start with a lower angular sampling, and are the error?
So we've looked at that. So there are actually several questions associated with that number of projections. So 1536, conveniently, is a power of 2 multiplied by a small integer. And as we decimate, we have to divide by 2. So you can ask, well, what happens if you have 751 projections, which is not even divisible by 2?
What about 1024?
Yeah, 1024. Okay. So we have actually tested this with small number of projections. So our first step is to interpolate angularly the data to a higher number of projections, which is a small integer times a power of 2, so our algorithm can work, and we get the same kind of accuracy and we get the same kind of speed ups compared to the conventional algorithm, plus the extra step of angular interpolation. So there is an extra cost to do that angular interpolation. That costs, that can be done using an FFT. So those are fairly cheap. Another thing, you can the same algorithm can be generalized to arbitrary prime decomposition. Not powers of 2, you can have other factors.
Okay. Yeah. I'm surprised about your factor of 50. So Wilson has a factor of 5 or something like this. And so even though the algorithm, the implementation should be very similar to Nielsen's algorithm.
To which algorithm? Nielsen's.
Starts with small pictures with very few directions, and as the pictures get larger, he uses more directions. So you must have an additional trick to come from.
This algorithm is actually not equivalent to Nielsen's. It's very different, at least in our interpretation. So what Nielsen's algorithm, so there's an entire group of algorithms which I've called link algorithms, actually dating back to Brady in 92, 4 years before Nielsen, but has been rediscovered several times. The idea is you reconstruct the entire image, but first using only 2 projections. You combine them. And then you combine projections in pairs, and then you combine those pairs and so on. So that's a hierarchy. The recursion follows in the projection domain. What you get is images of increasing resolution, but full-size images. So images are full-size at each step, but the resolution is increasing as you progress through the tree. So that's a different algorithm. And the problem is he doesn't have an easy way to incorporate improved interpolations and to trade off accuracy versus speed up, which we have using our Holdoff, where we intersperse exact decomposition, approximate decompositions. That's one. Another, I had a student do a master's thesis actually implementing those algorithms and comparing them to ours. And turns out the implementations are very difficult. You have to keep track of huge tables of various things of how to do the algorithm, so that slows that down as well. So,
we tried it too, we gave up. So.
Yeah, so as I said, the devil is in the constants. So theoretically, all these algorithms are n squared log n, all should asymptotically, as n goes to infinity, behave the same way. But for practical n, those factors, whether you get 5 or 50, is a big difference. Yeah, and for... we've run this for big images for 2048 by 2048 and get speed ups of several hundred. So you know, this scales appropriately. Yeah.
We'll take one more question.
Okay.